I'm really grateful, and I think it's great that I have never been censored before. But I do think that maybe like even 20 years ago, some of the articles I've written wouldn't have been published.
Student Free Press and censorship have a long and, if you'll forgive the pun, storied history in the United States. But what are the rights of student journalists today, and how did we get here? This is The Source, Quill and Scrolls podcast. I'm your host, Meera Bohanan Kumar, an editor-in-chief at the Little Hawk in Iowa City, Iowa, and a member of the Quill and Scrolls Student Advisory Board. At the start of the show, you heard my co-editor-in-chief at the Little Hawk, Nina Levezos-Tikopoulos, talk about her own experiences with the fear of censorship and how she felt that 20 years ago, she might not have had the rights she has today. Why does she feel that way? Well, it goes back to a 1988 United States Supreme Court case called Hazelwood versus Kuhlmeier. This is University of Iowa constitutional law professor Todd Pettis.
Hazelwood had to do with a high school student newspaper. They wrote some stories having to do with social issues, including, for example, teen pregnancy. And the story was based on, I think, three young women who were students at the high school who had gotten pregnant. And a student journalist interviewed those young women. And then the student reporter wrote up a story. But changed the name. And another story had to do with divorce, in which a student is talking about his inattentive father. The whole content of the entire paper had to be cleared with the principal. And the principal looks at those two stories and says, we're not going to run those stories. And so those stories were pulled from the publication. The students behind the publication sued, saying that was a violation of their freedoms. And what the Supreme Court said is that when it comes to school-sponsored events, they're allowed to exercise some control over the messages that will be associated with them by virtue of the fact that they're sponsoring this speech. And that in those settings, especially, school districts are free to make decisions about what is appropriate for students at different maturity levels. And so in that case, the students behind the newspaper lost, the school principal won.
Nina says she's had to weigh the pros and cons of certain stories in her own reporting, and sometimes it's caused controversy.
I think the most controversial one I wrote was about racial disparities in suspensions within our school district. There's a huge disparity between the amount of students in our district that were of color and that were suspended, and it was obviously more skewed to those students of color, and we found out with some of my friends' math skills that black students are two times more likely to be suspended in our school district. So that, I think, was kind of hurtful for some of, especially my administrators, to hear, because I do think they work really hard, but I don't think that they liked seeing those numbers or seeing someone bring attention to that. I had based this solely off numbers, and like any human, I have biases, but there was no way you could kind of counter my point or like my purpose of writing the article, but these people got very upset because of the controversy I caused. So I think what journalists' true duty is to kind of like give voices to people who don't have them. And with that article I wrote, those black students were really not being heard.
Now, despite this controversy, Nina and student journalists like her across the state of Iowa and 13 other states actually can't be censored by their school administrations because of laws called New Voices Laws, which essentially reverse Hazelwood on a state level and give more rights back to student journalists. Todd Pettis.
When states like Iowa say, as a statutory matter, we're going to give you more freedom than you're constitutionally entitled to, they're saying we could screen your publications and take a look at what you're saying and take some of it out if we thought it was inappropriate. The Constitution would allow us to do that, but the Constitution does not tell us that we have to do that, and indeed we're deciding that we're not going to do that. So you've got more freedom than you otherwise would.
But students in private schools don't necessarily have the same free speech rights as their public school peers.
The Constitution only is there when it gives you rights to free speech, free exercise of religion, due process, equal protection, search and seizure, cruel and unusual punishment, all those famous phrases that come from the Constitution. Those all are rights that you hold against government. And so at private schools, administrators at those schools have much, much greater freedom to regulate speech if they want to. They often don't want to. So very often, even though private institutions are not required to take the same path as state institutions when it comes to protecting things like First Amendment freedoms, they often choose to because they think it's a good idea.
Are students at private schools then not allowed to sue those schools for the same rights as students of public schools?
Right. And so if at Regina, for example, here in Iowa City, if Regina, which is a K-12 Catholic school, if they wanted to very heavily scrutinize student newspapers, if they had a list of theater productions, productions that school administrators thought involved nudity or bad images or inappropriate references to God or religion or didn't take the Pope seriously, whatever they chose to, take an interest in, school officials there could restrict all of that kind of student expression so far as the Constitution's concerned, because the Constitution doesn't speak to them. They're private people, they're not the government. And so they have much greater power to interfere with their students' efforts to express themselves.
Student journalists who face censorship can also fight for more rights, both through their journalism and in the political process. This is Iowa State Senator Joe Bolcom.
I think keep writing and keep finding opportunities to put their thoughts into the public discussion, whether that's publishing in op-eds, whether it's online publishing, alternative newspapers and publication publishing. I just think the best way to be involved is to be involved and to share your viewpoints.
Professor Pettis said that student press freedom and censorship can in fact be a policy issue, and not just at the state level.
And it could be a federal statute, it could be a federal regulation. Maybe the Department of Education issues some regulation or Congress passes a law that says, for example, any school that receives federal financial support has to meet the following conditions. And one of those conditions might be something about the protection of freedom of expression. I don't know the details of any such regulations that have come out under the Trump administration, but under the Trump administration, there has been talk about the Department of Education needing to do more to ensure freedom of expression in educational settings as a general matter.
Nina advises all student journalists to be aware of their rights, especially the ones given to them by their state governments.
Just read up on your state, because it does vary a lot state to state, but you may have more rights than you imagine. I think that there's a lot of misinformation out there, obviously, so you've got to really get your facts down and then be confident in your right to publish things.
That's all the time we have for this episode of The Source, Quill and Scrolls podcast. I would like to thank Nina Levezos-Dekopoulos, Professor Todd Pettis, and State Senator Joe Bolcom for their contributions to this episode. Until next time, this is Mira Bohannon-Kumar signing off.